The following presentation was recorded at a Christian Light Education workshop. More information at clp.org.
I won't ask for a raise of hands, but just in thinking, how many of you remember a specific storyteller in your life? Someone that really good at telling stories. And it can be that maybe it's just because of your personality that that person's stories spoke to you. So don't feel discouraged, teachers, if not all of your students respond to storytelling in the same way. I like to tell stories. You have to be careful with that. As I said in my earlier session, I could get into a discussion where I would tell stories and time slipped away and work didn't get done. So we have to be careful about that. But a story is a wonderful way to get across a point. Consider what Jesus did over and over again. Told a story. I'm sure the people were on the edge of their seat. What happened to that Good Samaritan? The Levite and the priest? They walked on the other side of the road? Sounds like today. You know, what was their response to that? So many times, Jesus did that to bring out a spiritual truth. It's very simple. It's to the point. And remember that his parables that he told, you know, and we try to get into those when we preach and we try to discuss a parable and we say, well, now this is what he meant here and this is what he meant here. Parables weren't meant to be dissected down to the last word. They didn't mean not every word meant something spiritual. But Jesus was trying to get across a spiritual point, and he used a parable to do that. So sometimes we overthink, overwork a parable. We can do that. It's good to find the meaning that's there. Sometimes there's hidden meaning there that we never thought of that before, and it could apply. But anyway, storytelling is the conveying of events in words and images, often by improvisation or embellishment. Oh. Has anyone here ever read James Herriot books? Do you think that really all those things happened to that veterinarian? Well, I really do. But he had a good way of telling it. He took an ordinary, everyday vet day, and he turned it into something magical. Not magical, but very interesting, because he knew how to tell a good story. He just took what happened to him in a regular day, and probably if you had been with him that day on his vet rounds, taking care of cattle and sheep and horses and stuff, you'd have thought, well, it's just another day in the life of a vet. He saw something special in what happened, especially his interaction with other people. And he took that and he wove it into a story, and he surprised himself with his book sales. His books sold many more copies than he ever dreamed that he would. He's no longer living. I feel bad about a person that was a good storyteller like him, who said at one time, what his son said, he has nothing to hang on to, he doesn't believe in God. So as godly school teachers, we have something to hang on to. We can tell godly stories that have godly meanings that will have a godly influence in the lives of the children that we're working with. We want to share stories for entertainment. Some stories are just interesting to listen to. In our family, if dad or mom has a good story, supper time, if we're all together, it's harder as the children get older, but if we're all together, that's the time to tell your story. And the others are supposed to sit up and take notice and listen. And not just because dad's telling the story, the others tell stories too. And we try to see it from that person's viewpoint, and why did they find this interesting? Okay, my daughter's first first and second grade teacher, I find what she comes home and tells about, I find that interesting because I taught first grade. But all of us can relate to it on some level or another. She comes home the other day and she says about this one girl who is quite smart in first grade, how that they studied the sound, the sound, iguana, for those of you that are in learning to read. And part of the exercise was that the children were to draw a picture of something that began with I. And that's kind of a tough one for first graders to think of. So Kayla is always prepared to come up with some ideas there. One little girl said, or this smarter than average girl says, I don't need any help. So Kayla kind of keeps an eye on her. And she says, or she draws a picture of a little girl with frizzy hair. And ooh, Kayla's trying to figure this out. And it's not going well. Kayla says, Adriana, what is that? Oh, she said it's an Israelite. She was right. Now, I don't know how you identified that as an Israelite, but and that made a great story at supper time. You know, all of us laughed. Adriana wasn't there. We had a good chuckle about something that happened in my daughter's day. My son works for this place called Turf Concepts. They put in yards and landscaping, and they make clean rivers and things like that. And he has many different stories to tell. He has his CDL, so he can drive big truck. But recently, his company was involved with the county in giving people that are out of work jobs. And they were helping. It was a county north of ours. They were helping supply the equipment and some supervision for these men to go out and clean rivers and creeks from a storm that we had two summers ago. But along the way, they offered a class for them to be able to get their truck driver's license. There's what we call CDL. And Jared was a teacher. I can't imagine my son doing this. And then he came home and he said, Dad, these people, they just say, oh, just use common sense, you'll pass the test. And he said, I'm telling them, fellows, you've got to study for this. This is a tough test. And they're just blowing me off. They don't care. A couple days later, he comes back and says, nobody passed the test. Oh, you know, and I can sympathize with him. I taught school, and I had some students sometimes that thought in that direction. So there's a good story, too. I mean, you know, stories that we enjoy at home. Now, you're in the classroom and you're relating stories. Let's see if we can make those stories relate to whatever the subject at hand is. I've helped teach consumer math. Now, it's more of a high school level. I love teaching that type of thing because it's so practical, and there's all sorts of stories that can be told as you tell it, or as you teach it. You can tell stories about what happened to this person or that person who didn't have insurance, or you know, was in an accident and what happened, or somebody that didn't read all the fine print on the loan when they signed their name and found out they had to pay the interest first, and you know, there's just all sorts. I've got a mindful of stories about things like that. Now, you as a teacher may say, well, I don't know that type of thing. And that is gained by experience. And that experience is gained by reading. I hope you like to read if you're a school teacher. You need to read good things. You need to read good, but you need to read a fair amount. It will help to fill your mind with good stories that you'll be able to pull them up. You may forget them. You may not be able to tell me what you read about last week. But if something happens in class that applies to that, more than likely you'll be able to pull it up. Oh yeah, I read something about that. And tell the class about it, short terms. Doesn't have to be lengthy. Remember, you've got schoolwork to do. So, okay. My first point, entertainment. We do it for entertainment, we do it for education, and we've talked about that some. We do it for cultural preservation. The stories that Pete will tell tonight in the evening session are part of, many of you, as part of your heritage. And it's for cultural preservation that stories like that have been written down and are given in a way so that you can learn from the past and you can maintain your culture. You want to do that. Don't lose your culture. And storytelling can help instill moral values. Whenever I have a devotional, I like to do object lessons and things like that in a school. But I like to read or tell a story to go with it. I try to find a Bible story, and I try to find what I call a book story that will apply to the lesson that I'm trying to give. God is the greatest master storyteller of all time. Look at his word. Look how interesting the Old Testament is. Maybe you think it's not. But again, as I mentioned earlier, my mother was very good at telling Old Testament Bible stories. To me, they are very interesting. It's partly because of the way she told them and the way she acted them out in front of me. Mom's not bashful about that. She still has children's meetings sometimes, and children love to listen to her. My children still like when Grandma comes around and tells stories about her life as a young married lady. I'll tell you a little bit about my family. My mother had 5 children in 7 years, and then 7 years later I came along. So I'm kind of an only child situation. The other 5 really had an exciting life because my parents were in mission work in Kentucky for quite a few of those there of their growing up years. I was born in Kentucky, but moved. We finally moved back to the home community about when I was 3 months old. They lived in a place where there was feuds. People shot each other. Moonshine was produced, alcohol. And the closest they could get to the one house they lived in with a car was 3 miles. It was very rough and tumble, and life was very difficult sometimes back in there. Back end of Kentucky. My father was not ordained as a minister as such, but he worked as a what they call a lay minister. There was no minister there at the time that they were there, so he did preach. And I'll just give you a story from then that my children would find interesting. There was a man from the community that was coming to the church with his family and was making progress in becoming a church member. My father was working with him in an instruction class, and he was making what we thought was great strides towards becoming a church member, very fervent, serious person. One thing that he did, he enjoyed praying in our prayer meeting time, and whereas we would regularly turn around and kneel facing the back of the church, not all churches, I still know churches today that kneel towards the front, we would kneel backwards, but he would kneel facing forward and very upright. He stayed up very, very straight. And one Wednesday night, he was praying along out loud in that position. Now, the church wasn't nearly as big as this, but there was a drunk man sitting in the back of the church, and he was bored. And he saw this fellow up there praying. He didn't have his eyes shut. He picked up a songbook out of the rack and threw it like a frisbee and hit the guy in the back of the head. The next thing my father knew, those two men were fighting here in the middle of the church. And that man could never understand the concept of non-resistance. He finally did. He did not join the church. They were sad about that. But it came out through, and there is a story. My children are gripped by things like that, and I can tell you more stories about their Kentucky life. It's very had very interesting things. I only know it through storytelling because I didn't experience it. Okay. We find that in the past, storytelling was an important part of passing on, well, as I said, cultural things. People would draw pictures on caves and stuff just so that You know, you could remember what happened in this hunt or who got killed or, you know, what happened in the past. They drew symbols on, for stories on cave walls to help them tell it. Books weren't readily available, so telling was a good way to go. Let's look at the what's in a story. What's the purpose? You need to make sure that the story you choose suits the purpose. Now, the story I just told, the only purpose I told it for was to tell you a story, but to illustrate how you can pick stories, short story from out of your past, and you can use it for some point. There would be a good moral there, non-resistance or loving your neighbors yourself. But as you use stories in the classroom, make sure that they suit the purpose for which they are intended. You want students to remember the point of the story, not just what happened. Now, I could spend my whole time just telling you stories here, but would that do you any good? We want to get something good out of this class, so I'm trying to give you some points to go with also, along with that. Because, well, I enjoy listening to a minister that can tell lots of good stories. But sometimes at the end of that message, I think, oh, what was his subject? What did he really talk about? Well, he told a lot of stories. I remember some of those stories. They were good stories, and they had good morals to them. But what was the subject? So be careful that the students know the point, know what's you're trying to get across there, not just that it's an interesting story. A story should be, here's the characteristics of a story. A story should be interesting. It should be accurate. And I think that there's some leniency there. Sometimes we don't always remember all the details as we go, and we may change things or give some numbers a little bit differently. But if we're staying true to what the story means, I feel okay in doing something like that. Maybe your conscience won't let you do that. But sometimes it really hurts a story if you're all the time having to go back and say, maybe it was 83 instead of 85 or something like that. Maybe just make it clear that I'm not sure of the number, but I think it was this, and keep on going with the story. Okay, interesting, accurate, brief, clear, fresh. Do your students hear the same stories over and over and over again? You always tell the same thing. And I have to watch that because I can't remember who I told what story to. And I'm sure it happened in the classroom too. But usually my students were, they didn't always have a lot of tact. They just said, "Brother Hartman, we've heard that story before." Okay, I'll be quiet. Or we'll find another story, okay? Brief, clear, fresh, and comprehensible. Do they understand it? Do I have to use different words? Okay, when I'm telling a story to a first and second grader, sometimes I have to use different words than I do to a sixth grader because they don't understand it. They don't understand the words that are used there. That's why in our reading books, you find that the reading level, the terminology in the books and all, raises because it makes it more interesting for the children if they use a little bigger words, words that are more on their level. But on the other hand, we need to remember that the little people don't always understand it. If I'm given a devotional in a school where I'm addressing the whole school body, I try to keep it on the level of the younger children. The older children will get something out of it. But it's of no value if all I do is target on 7th and 8th graders, and the 1st and 2nd graders are bored, and they don't understand what's going on. Where do you get stories? Well, I talked about reading. You can get them out of nature. This past summer, I do a little bit of farming, make a little bit of alfalfa hay. And this past summer, I was mowing a field, and I had one strip left to do down through the field. Well, one strip, and a notch that went out to the road. So I went over to do the notch, and as I was going, I happened to look up in the pine tree, a big, I'm going to say, 70-foot tree, and there sat a red-tailed hawk. I thought, aha. And I knew that earlier when I'd cut that hay field and a young boy was riding with me on the tractor, he said, "Lennon, look." And I missed it. He said, "That hawk got a mouse right out of the field." Well, I thought, that hawk's up there in that tree. He knows I'm cutting hay again, and I know there's rabbits in that last strip of hay. I bet he gets one. I was all anxious to cut that last strip and see what was going to happen, you know. Well, I finished up the corner by the road, looked up in the tree, and the hawk's gone. Well, so much for that. I head into the last strip, and I look ahead, and he's already got a rabbit, and he's sitting right where the tractor's going to go. He flopped out of the way. The rabbit was heavy enough he could hardly get off the ground. He flew a couple feet off the ground, but he flew out in the field about 100 feet into the neighbor's field and finished off his lunch. Then other people started, and I don't know if it's the same hawk or not, but in like a three-mile area, other people started saying that he was frequenting their places, and we're not sure if some kittens got lost that way. He stopped at my mother's place, or some hawk did, got into the chicken yard, decapitated one chicken, and was tearing it apart when they chased it away, and it just flopped down to the other end of the pen and held two chickens down with its wings. That makes good budget material. My mom's a budget scribe, so. Maybe you don't know what the budget is. Budget is a newspaper from Holmes County that Amish Mennonite people sometimes subscribe to. Okay, so there's a story from nature. If I was still teaching school, I'd probably use that. And I might dig around a little bit because I heard some other people say they had some experiences with a red-tailed hawk this summer too. Was it the same one? We don't know that for sure. But there's a story from nature. Common occurrences. What happens over and over again? But can you put a new twist on it when you tell a story with it? Can you make it interesting in the telling of it? If you're interested in what's happening, more than likely you'll be able to tell it back in a way that interests other people. Occasionally I'm surprised at how interested somebody is in something I'm saying. And I realize, well, it's partly because I'm interested in it. So I am going to try to talk about it in an interesting way. But as I said at the beginning, we all have different ways that we relate to others and things we're interested in. So to one person, a story is interesting. To another person, that doesn't really interest me. Okay, nature, common occurrences, personal experiences. As things happen to you in life, do you try to remember them? Maybe write down some details? This will make a good story, especially as a teacher. Or maybe you hear somebody else's personal experience in something. Can I remember that well enough to tell that story in class tomorrow? Something like that always triggers something in my mind that I wonder if I could use that for a devotional at school. Current events. What's happening in the news? A lot of our news today is very negative, very bad, sad, terrible. But there's good things too. Occasionally in our newspaper, in our local community, they'll run some letters to the editor of people who are thankful for something someone did for them. Very uplifting. And those are oftentimes would be worthwhile telling or reading to a class. History, biography. The history idea. As you would teach a history class, can you do some reading about it that would give you some stories to help liven it up a little bit? Some personal stories into the life of the person that you're studying, besides just what the history book says. So yeah, it takes time, effort to put together a group of stories to tell. You may also garner stories from other people, books, or magazines. Okay, So how do I tell a story well? And I need to check my time quickly. Okay, 3 o'clock. How do we tell a story well? Read it ahead of time. If you have it in book form, be sure that you take the effort to do that. And I will say that for reading. If you're reading to a class, and I love to read children's stories, but I want to read the book ahead of time. I've tried it without, and I'm going to stumble. I'm going to make mistakes and things like that, and I can do that anyhow. But I'll make less of them if I've practiced some. Put some effort into it. Same thing goes for storytelling. Get yourself in front of a mirror in a place where nobody else can see you and tell it. See if you're interested in what is coming out. Does it sound interesting? Know its characters and events. Okay, in this story here, I know who the characters are. One of them I tend to side with. I like them both. There's two main characters in this story. I like them both, but I like the one a little better than the other because of the way they come out in the story. So as I tell or read this story, I'm going to read this story after a while. As I read this story, you're going to be able to tell that I like the one person a little better than the other just because of the way I come through on the story. Make it your own. You'll hear somebody else tell a story, and oftentimes you'll try to tell it the same way, and that's okay. But if you see some areas where you think you could tell it in a little different way and make it a little more interesting, go right ahead. Now, I'm not suggesting changing the story drastically and embellishing it to where you're lying. Don't do that. But go ahead and make it your own. If it's not necessarily a true story, then maybe you can even change some of the characters' names to suit the way your tongue twists or something like that. I mean, there's different things you can do there. But you don't want to change it so much that it turns into another story then, because that's another story. All right. Verbally dramatize the characters in action. Now, I like to do that. Now, I learned that from listening to my mother tell stories, because she made it come alive. When Jesus was walking on the seashore and Peter's out fishing, she says, "Children, have you any meat?" Only she says a lot louder than that. I got the picture right away. And because there's a bit of drama there as we tell the story. Let them see that there's some action. Cast your nets on the other side. There's action there with your hands. Make the story come alive. Now, this is one that you can take or leave. Tell, do not read or recite the story. I still like reading a story, probably the best. I like telling stories, but I still like a story to be... I like to read stories out loud to people. That way I don't miss things. And a story like this is long enough that it would be hard to tell it in its entirety and come across real well. Now, I could give you a sketchy outline of this story, maybe tell it in such a way that you would say, "Hey, I'd kind of like to read that book." But I would miss some of the details. But if you're using it in a classroom setting, you don't have time to read this story except at story time, perhaps. So, that'd be okay then. You just need to tell it. Don't stop and say, "Oh, we got to read this whole book here." And there goes 10 or 15 minutes. Emphasize with your voice and inflection what you want your students to hear. Appeal to auditory, that's hearing, and visual, sight, senses. Appeal to those things. If you're a good storyteller, people are going to be watching. They want to see what he does next. They're going to be listening. And you're going to have their full attention. Takes practice. Storytelling can be overdone. Don't overuse stories or just that your whole day is a story time. You won't get all your work done. But it should be a special time to the children when their teacher stops and says, I've got a story to tell you about that. Pay attention here, and you tell a little story. Every story should have four parts. Needs an introduction, where you can understand what the story is about and who the characters are and the background and where it's happening and what's going on in the story. You need a plot. What's happening in this story? This story tells you, will show you the background, but then you begin to understand what this story is going to be about. It's just about a short section in these two children's lives and what that section is. That's the plot. Then there's a climax. It's the high point of the story. It's the part where you don't want the storyteller to be quiet. You don't want the teacher to say, it's time to get back to work. We'll finish this tomorrow. Oh, Brother Hartman, I don't usually do that. And then you have the ending. It's after the climax. It's going to make it kind of wrap up the story, make it come together. All right, we're going to start on this book. We may stop partway through and discuss that a little bit more. This book is called Rachel and Obadiah. How many are familiar with this book? Okay. There are more of them about Obadiah. I like Obadiah better in some of the other stories. Okay, we're listening for the introduction now. This introduction is going to describe where this story's at, where it's going, what's going to happen here. It was a warm, sunny day on Nantucket Island. No one was stirring on India Street, but back of the old Pinkham house, Rachel and Obadiah Starbuck were busy picking blackberries. Rachel's pail was almost full. Obadiah's pail was only half full.
If thee eats all thy berries, Rachel told her brother, mother won't have enough for a pie.
Obadiah popped another big blackberry into his mouth. Juice trickled down his chin. I'm not eating them all, he said. Just some.
Elizabeth, Elizabeth Woods. Across the alley, Jessamy Morse was leaning out of her window, calling to her neighbor. Elizabeth Woods raised her window and poked her head out.
Has thee heard?
Cried Jessamy Morse. It's the Cleo. She's at the bar. A boy brought Sarah Coffin the news. All well on board. Nathaniel is home safe. So is Abraham and thy Jabez too. All safe.
Praise God, said Elizabeth Woods. I'll get the baby and see thee at the wharf.
Both windows banged shut. Suddenly, all Nantucket was astir. The Cleo had been to sea for more than a year. Everyone seemed to be running to greet her. Rachel and Obadiah ran too. They wiggled right up to the edge of the dock to watch the ship, her flags waving and sails billowing, coming home. Okay, there we have the introduction to the story. Where's it at? Anybody listening? Nantucket, Nantucket Island. So it's along the seacoast. What's coming in? Train? Ship. Ship's coming in. And they were able to tell by the flags that all was well long before it made landfall. Could you tell what background these children are? What is it? Quakers. Quakers, that's right. The thee and thou in the language that told you they were Quaker children. We know what the children were doing. The interchange between the two women out of the windows gives us an idea of wives that whose husbands have been to sea, and they're anxiously waiting to get down to the ship where their husbands will be getting off the ship. But we really don't know what the plot is of this story yet. See, this was all introduction. And if you tell a good story, you need these details at the beginning. Just like I needed some details when I was telling about my mother and father and our family in Kentucky, I needed to acquaint you with some details of where they were at, what they were doing, and what kind of community it was where they were at,
so that a person throwing a songbook at the back of somebody's head wouldn't seem quite as strange as it might in your regular setting. So, you know, there's the introduction to that story, this story. See where we're coming from there. The introduction arouses interest, presents chief characters, gives background information, and focuses attention on the central issue to be considered. It should be clear and concise. And we're not quite done with the introduction because we haven't covered quite all of those. There will be some more introductory parts to this story. The plot is the succession of events. Avoid excessive details and trivial information. So we don't want to have too many details and too much trivial information in the main part of the story so that we can have a good story and keep people's attention. So, the plot. Okay. There will be certain sentences of the next part yet that will still be giving you some introduction because it introduces more people. Asa was showing something to his friends. They're down at the wharf, remember. "What's that?" Obadiah asked his brother. Okay, that there told you that. I mean, first of all, who's Asa? Oh, it's Obadiah's brother. Asa held up a silver coin. "From the captain's wife," he said. "I was going by Jacob Slade's mill when he runs up to me and says he just sighted the Cleo rounding the bar. He bids me run down to Captain Coffin's house with the news, and Sarah Coffin gives me this." Asa let Obadiah hold the money. It was new and very shiny. Obadiah gave it back. "Does thee think Jacob Slade would ever send me with the news?" he said. "Oh, the Speedwell's due next week," said Asa. "I reckon he might if thee is at his mill when he sights her." At supper time, father. Oh, I'm sorry. At supper time, mother, father, Moses, and Rebecca. Who's Moses and Rebecca? Well, it's named with mother and father. You assume then that there are more. It's another brother and sister. And you can tell that somewhat from the picture. At supper time, mother, father, Moses, and Rebecca heard all about how Asa earned his prize. Obadiah said, "Next week the Speedwell's coming in. I'm going up to the mill every day until Jacob Slade sights her."
"So am I," said Rachel.
"Thee," Obadiah laughed. "He'd never send thee. Girls can't run, not as fast as boys."
"We can too," said Rachel.
Mother said, "Girls can pick more blackberries than boys."
"I can too run fast," said Rachel. "Jacob Slade would send me, wouldn't he, father?"
Father kissed Rachel and put her in her chair. "I know I would," he said. "I think Jacob Slade would too." The next day was first day. And if I was reading to very little children, I would stop and explain that that's Sunday. That's what the Quakers would call Sunday. The Starbuck family were all at meeting, or church. So was Jacob Slade. After meeting, Obadiah went up to him and said, "If I happen to be at thy mill and thee happen to sight a ship, would thee send me to the captain's house with the news?"
"Why, of course, lad, if thee is a good runner."
In a very tiny voice, Rachel said,
"Would thee send me?"
"Well, now," said the miller, "a girl's never carried the news, but I don't know why not."
"She can't run fast," said Obadiah.
"I can too,"
said Rachel. Early the next day, Obadiah went right up to the mill. Rachel went right after him. Jacob Slade scratched his chin.
"Thee could have a mighty long wait," he said. "I don't know when the Speedwell's coming in. Could be this week or next. She might not even come in at all. Besides, how could I send both of you?"
Obadiah said, "We can have a race. We can run down to Pleasant Street and back up Mill Street to Prospect. Thee could send the winner."
"Does that seem fair, Obadiah?" said the miller. "Rachel is smaller than thee."
"She can start first," said Obadiah. After a moment, Jacob Slade said,
"All right, if Rachel gets a head start."
See how the plot's playing out here now? You're starting to see the details of the story. It's not so much about picking blackberries. And it's not completely about getting the silver coin or a shiny coin. It's about a power struggle between Obadiah and Rachel. And what's going to happen here and how will they treat each other in this? There can't be two winners. How's it going to work out? And we said that a good story has a climax. And sometimes they'll have more than one. You'll think you're at the climax, and then you find it gets maybe just a little bit more exciting, even after you've reached that point. And it's good if you can tell stories and all in such a way that you can keep the story flowing at that point. If you have to stop in the middle and go back and get details, you'll lose your students. But you need to be able to flow along with that once you reach that point. And really notice this story at the end, how the ending is brief and should promote reflection.
"Get ready, get set," said the miller. When he said, "Go," Rachel went.
Soon she was running down Pleasant Street. Someone was on the stoop of Grandmother Mitchell's house. It was Aunt Dorcas with a big basket.
"My goodness, Rachel," she said. "Wherever is thee going in such a hurry?"
"A race," said Rachel. "I'm winning."
And she kept on running. Near Summer Street, Rachel heard footsteps pounding behind her. It was Obadiah. He caught up to her and ran a circle around her, showing off. But suddenly, Obadiah let out a whoop and dashed over to a field next to the bunker house. "Blackberries," he shouted. "Millions of them. I can pick a bushel and still catch up to thee." Rachel kept on running. Turning into Mill Street, she caught her foot in her petticoat and fell down. Rachel began to cry. "Why, oh, why couldn't she wear breeches like a boy?" A wagon creaked by. "Whoa," said the driver. "What's the matter, little girl? Are you hurt?" Rachel picked herself up and wiped her tears away with her fist. "No," she said, and she kept on running. Ahead was Prospect Street. Behind, Obadiah was nowhere in sight. Just over the top of the hill, getting near and near, were the vanes of Jacob Slade's windmill, slowly turning. Rachel kept on running. Jacob Slade was waiting with a big smile on his face.
"Thee's won!" he exclaimed. "Good for thee, Rachel Starbuck!"
Was it true? Had she really won? Where was Obadiah?
The miller said, "Does thee think thee can run any farther?"
Now see, we hit a climax, didn't we? She won the race. But now he says, "Do you think you can run any farther?" Something else is going to happen. Rachel nodded her head.
I can run much farther," she said.
Jacob Slade took her by the hand.
"Let me show thee something," he said. "Look yonder, out by Brad Point."
"A ship," said Rachel. "Is she?"
"The Speedwell," said the miller. "She's early. See her flags? They show all's well aboard. Does thee think thee can run to Captain Hussey's house with the good news?"
"Yes," said Rachel. "Oh, yes."
Lydia Hussey wiped her eyes and blew her nose.
"I dream the Speedwell was lost at sea," she said. "Praise the Lord, that wasn't true."
The captain's wife gave Rachel a hug, then went to her cupboard and pulled out a brass box from behind a blue teapot. She took a silver coin from the box and gave it to Rachel.
"Thank thee, dear child," she said.
She put on her shawl and bonnet. Then she began to cry all over again.
"All well on board, did thee say?"
Lydia Hussey got another coin from the box and pressed it into Rachel's hand.
"Bless thee, Rachel Starbuck. Thee bring us the gladdest tidings."
Rachel got another hug and a rather wet kiss. Once again, all Nantucket was astir. Rachel stood at the gate. Okay, we're past the top. Now we're at the ending. Once again, all Nantucket was astir. Rachel stood at the gate of Captain Hussey's house looking at the two beautiful pieces of silver. Whatever would she do with two of them? Down the street came Obadiah. Blackberry juice was all over his face, and he looked very angry. Rachel put one coin in her pocket. She would keep it forever, and she knew just what to do with the other one. It's the end of the story. But right there, you can have discussion. What did she do with the other coin? We're pretty sure that she gave it to Obadiah. Obadiah probably didn't look so angry then, because he finally had a coin, although he probably wanted to give the news. But he probably would have wanted to skip the kiss from Lydia Hussey. But there you see the relationship. You know, there's a good opportunity to point out how two people get along and treating other people the way you want to be treated. Now, the story was nice in that it had two coins, and she didn't have to decide whether to give her brother the only coin she had. There was two coins to share. That's a nice thing about a story. Another question I would ask children is, do you think Obadiah would have done that? What would Obadiah have done? His nature that came through, maybe it's partly my interpretation of it, would be that maybe he would have kept both coins himself. I don't know. And it's thought-provoking. That story is thought-provoking for many age levels of children. You can go with very young children, and they'll be able to catch the drift of what's happening there and how Rachel was kind to her brother, even though maybe he didn't deserve it. And he had treated her, said things to her about her that weren't very kind. So there's just some ideas of, to me, that's a good story to illustrate what we've been talking about here today. Another thing you need to consider in the last few moments here is that each of you have a story within you. There's a story of your life. And we talked about personal experiences and things like that. Don't consider your life so mundane, so common, so run-of-the-mill that it's not worth telling stories from. You'll be surprised at how interested other people are in what you have to tell. Sometimes it's just because it strikes a chord with them and they say, Lyndon experiences the same problems that I do. I can totally relate to that. Other times it may just be a funny experience that, wow, they'll say, wow, I've never had anything like that happen to me. How would I react in that? See, that's a great thing about stories, is talking about how we should react when certain situations come our way. And as we do different types of schoolwork, it needs to boil down to that eventually at the end of the day, is the fact that I will react in a proper way regardless of the situation that I find myself in. I have some books up here if you want to look at some of the reading material that I buy lots of books. And books that have interesting stories in it. There's books like this one. This is a favorite of mine. I often read this at different schools I go to for devotions. As long as I try not to do it 2 years in a row, but it has a good lesson to it. It's a good book. Look for stories that will build your children up. Be careful what kind of literature and stories you tell, what kind of things you bring into your classroom. Make sure it's those things that promote godly living. We're talking about an Anabaptist worldview, and we want to keep that in our midst. So may the Lord bless you. I hope I've helped you to see the value of telling stories. It's interesting.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.